Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, June 11th, 2015. The latest round of talks in Addis Ababa have adjourned. The government negotiator says mediators need to keep the South Sudan peace talks on track.
There are certain issues that the mediation should tell the other side very frankly that these issues will be addressed after the formation of the transitional government of national unity or are not valid issues.
However, the opposition says the latest plan from mediators needs to be changed.
It is actually a summary of maintaining the same status quo of Salva Kiir being the president with the same system of governance, with the same system of domination of few elite that are with Salva Kiir.
Peace talks and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The latest round of peace talks has ended in Addis Ababa, and some progress was made. Regional bloc IGAD, which has been trying to broker peace in South Sudan for the last 17 months, gave the parties at the latest round of talks a document which is expected to be the basis for the next round of negotiations. IGAD also announced that the number of mediators at peace talks will be expanded. Eskinder Freyu is at the just-ended round of talks in Addis Ababa today and spoke to South Sudan in Focus at Editor Karen Zeitvogel.
The consultation concluded yesterday. IGAD gave a summary of a document that will be given to the negotiating parties in the near future to the three delegations, the South Sudan warring parties and also the former detainees, and now the delegations are studying that document. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's a final document, but IGAD has been, you know, listening to the positions of the three negotiating parties and came up with a sample document, which could be a negotiating document. I managed to talk to the chief opposition negotiator, Taban Dengai, today, and he said the document has shortcomings, in fact.
The document we got yesterday addresses only the crisis in the Greater Upper Nile. It is ignoring the war in Bahr Ghazal, ignoring war in Equatoria, ignoring root causes of the conflict. It is actually a summary of maintaining the same status quo of Salva Kiir being the president with the same system of governance, with the same system of domination of few elite that are with Salva Kiir.
The government chief negotiator, Nyal Deng Nyal, did not go into details of the document. He rather focused on the way the consultations have been going. He believes that IGAD has not been tough enough on the opposition. Let's listen to him.
There are certain issues that the mediation should tell the other side very frankly that these issues are either issues that will be addressed after the formation of the transitional government of national unity or are not valid issues. For instance, the idea of the rebellion having their own army during the transitional period. I mean, these are issues that should be dismissed out of hand.
We've heard that they might expand the number of parties at the talks so there will be more mediators. Has that happened? Have they taken a final decision on that?
The negotiations from now on will be held by a group called IGAD Plus. That means more countries and organizations will come to the mediation. The African Union Peace and Security Council have selected five countries from the five regions of Africa. Algeria will be representing North Africa. Nigeria will be representing West Africa. Chad will be representing Central Africa. And South Africa will be representing the South. And Rwanda will be representing East Africa. Other countries that will come to the, that will join the mediation are the countries known as the Troika, the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway. China will also be part of the mediation team. The African Union and the European Union also will join the mediation team. But we understand today that the IGAD Plus summit will not take place on the sidelines of the African Union summit in Johannesburg. So they will be launching the new mediation mechanism during the African Union summit in South Africa. And after that, the IGAD Plus summit will take place in Addis Ababa sometime soon, but the date has not been announced yet.
How have the parties reacted to the announcement that it's going to become IGAD Plus mediation?
You know, we talked to the chief government negotiator, Nyal Deng Nyal, yesterday.
I don't think the Plus will add any real value, to be honest. But we have no problem with other African countries being brought on board, with other organizations being brought on board. But that's not the issue. The issue is that the matters that are on the table for discussion should be dealt with very much more seriously than they're being dealt with now.
Mm-hmm. But the chief opposition negotiator, Thabang Dengai, said it's good to bring more voices to the mediation team, and he welcomes the IGAD Plus.
We have accepted fully, wholeheartedly, the new mechanism. We are ready to continue negotiating.
The IGAD chief mediator, former Ethiopian Foreign Minister Siyum Asfin, said IGAD will still be leading the peace process, though more countries and organizations are invited to be part of the mediation team. He said this is a regional process and it will be still led by the Intergovernmental Authority for Development, IGAD.
That was Eskinder Fure talking with reporter Karen Zeitvogel about the latest round of peace talks in Addis Ababa. In an open letter addressed to Secretary of State John Kerry and National Security Advisor Susan Rice, the Enough Project and five other organizations called for an increase in targeted sanctions against the perpetrators of the ongoing conflict in South Sudan. Akshay Kumar, a Sudan and South Sudan policy analyst at the Enough Project, says she believes that targeted sanctions will convince those involved to finally stop bickering and reach a peace agreement.
My organization, the Enough Project, along with Human Rights Watch and a couple of other groups, wrote to senior U.S. government officials asking them to take strong action and use the existing framework that we have on the books, already in law, for sanctions against those obstructing the peace in South Sudan to make additional designations against the powerful men who are preventing South Sudan from finding a peaceful resolution to its conflict.
My organization, the Enough Project, along with Human Rights, she says, and a couple of other groups, wrote to those top lawmakers. She says the Enough Project is recommending that the U.S. and other international partners should put a freeze on assets of, in her words, the people responsible for the conflict.
So the idea behind a targeted sanction is that we don't want to affect the lives of the people who are living in South Sudan and who are being put through a terrible trial by their leaders' unwillingness to make a peace. Instead, a targeted sanction like an asset freeze would seize the money which is in these leaders' bank accounts, money which they may have stolen from the government itself or money which they're using to fund the war.
Kumar says the idea behind the sanctions is that the U.S. does not want to affect the lives of the people of South Sudan who've already suffered so much, but to seize the money which is in the bank accounts of the leaders on both sides, money which she says may have been stolen from the government itself. The letter comes on the same day the Enough Project released a new report which focuses on the motivations of the key players in the conflict, how they benefit from war economies, and how targeted killings continue despite talk of peace.
My biggest worry that certain leaders will be able to continue to use the state for their own benefit, to take care of themselves and their families and their colleagues and associates who are from the same region, but that the average South Sudanese person will not see any benefit.
The letter also urges neighboring countries to get involved and exert pressure on the warring parties to end the conflict.
The other big problem is that the peace process, the way it's working now, is only listening to those handful of people instead of finding a way to tap into the voices and perspectives of the millions of South Sudanese who also deserve to have a, a voice and a stake in their future.
Kumar says only if there is multilateral pressure will it be possible to bring about a peaceful resolution to the conflict in South Sudan. South Sudanese church leaders are not waiting for this round of IGAD-led talks to make progress. Last week, officials with the South Sudan Council of Churches held a week-long retreat in Kigali, where their Rwandan counterparts advised how the church can become more involved in uniting the warring parties. From Kigali, Megumi Davis-Rakarunge has this report for VOA.
The church leaders, including 14 bishops, say their one-week conference in Kigali taught them that the church actually has a bigger role to play in unifying the nation. The participants included representatives from the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, the Anglican Church, and the Roman Catholic Church. Throughout the week, religious leaders took part in seminars, toured memorial sites, and visited villages where genocide victims live peacefully side by side with some of their perpetrators in and around Kigali. The Rwandans told the church leaders that all South Sudanese must repent and forgive each other. But the head of Anglican Church of Rwanda, Onesphore Ruaje, cautioned the visiting clerics that achieving forgiveness after the trauma of war does not come easy.
Even the people who are involved, I mean the church people from the pastors, the bishops, other leaders of the church, they are also wounded. And we started with the what we named how to heal the wounds of the people when yourself you are wounded, the wounded healer. And we decided also to go through this trauma counseling, this trauma healing of our leaders so that they can be instrument in the community to heal our society.
The Rwandans also told the South Sudanese clerics they have instituted different reconciliation and socio-therapy programs within the various church communities. Church leaders from both countries agreed the first step for South Sudan must be a united call for an end to the war. One strategy they have adopted is to form committees among farmers and pastoralists who will in turn preach messages of love and understanding in their communities. They also resolved to promote human rights, respect of rule of law, and an end to impunity from the pulpit. Archbishop Roger said in order to do that, Rwandan clerics did not solely focus on the victims of genocide.
You see, a person taking a panga to kill his or her neighbor, he's not in his own. There is some forces interior which push him to do what he did. So he needs healing too. For us, we use the biblical understanding of healing and reconciliation, and it cannot be a reconciliation without repentance.
The clerics believe it is the church's divine responsibility to call for peace and calm in a nation. But they acknowledge that after all the killing and suffering, it is difficult for even some of them not to align with their own tribes. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinj, reporting from Kigali.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The Red Cross issues an ominous warning on food insecurity in South Sudan. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What are the things that distract you during your work or school day?
Currently, social media. Well, because of smartphone, notifications pop up on your phone. You are tempted to look at them. You are tempted to answer. You want friends to know what's going on. You want to see what's going on in other people's life. Yeah.
Social media. WhatsApp, Facebook, Viber, because there's this alert. So it's like immediately you want to see what is happening. And that's my main distraction.
Like when you're reading and someone calls, you maybe the things you've read may go off and you may end up not getting anything. In short, phone says may disrupt you when you're reading.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Red Cross says food insecurity for more than 4 million people in South Sudan is near famine levels. It warns many people could face starvation if violence continues. An upsurge in violence is blamed for the displacement of about 100,000 people in the last 4 weeks alone. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The latest displacement of South Sudanese is in addition to the 2 million already forced from their homes by a year and a half of conflict. In Juba, International Committee of the Red Cross spokesman Jason Strazuzo says many are fending for themselves in the bush.
In these areas, they simply don't have access to food, and we think that many of them are going to stay there for a long time in order to keep safe away from the fighting that's taking place. So we're worried about their nutritional situation in the coming weeks and months.
The displaced are in areas with little or no chance of having livelihoods, and there are rising food prices and few social services.
Generally speaking, it's the northeast part of the country. Specifically, we're looking at three states, Unity State, Upper Nile State, and Jonglei. And one of the locations we're most worried about is in Unity, around the town of Lair. We've had major operations there over the last year, distributing food to people who need it because there's no functioning market. Food is not making its way there, so it's simply not available.
Strazuzo says Red Cross operations have been affected by the fighting.
First of all, most importantly, we had to abandon our offices in Lair last month when violence approached the town. Our office is empty, and therefore our operations aren't working there. And what we do is medical and food in that region. We're still able to do some medical evacuations. We've done three medical evacuation flights from Lair in the last 2 weeks, and we're still doing emergency food drops.
One food drop last month aided about 6,000 people.
Importantly, you have to put the food where the people are, so we're working to find where the people are, and we hope to do more food distributions in the coming couple days.
However, he says airdrops are expensive and not sustainable in the long term for the numbers of people who need help.
We're looking at future problems as well because this is the planting season, and the people around Lair in particular who have fled, they're not planting, or if they did get a chance to plant, they're not tending to their crops.
One South Sudanese man told the Red Cross there's little incentive to plant or tend crops because people may soon be displaced again or lose their crops to bad weather. Strazuzo says the ICRC is making an emergency appeal for $23 million for its South Sudan operations.
Our South Sudan operations for the International Committee of the Red Cross are the second largest in the world behind our activities in Syria. And we're going to put these funds to more food distributions. We also distribute seeds. And, of course, we have five surgical teams out in the field who are operating on the people who are wounded in war. And just last month, they did many, many more of those emergency surgeries than they had for the rest of the year combined.
The Red Cross is calling on warring parties to respect international law and allow humanitarian workers and aid to reach those at risk. It says civilians are not part of the conflict and should never be targeted. In related news, the UN World Food Program says it plans to cut food rations to about a half million Somali and South Sudanese refugees in camps in northern Kenya. It blames that on a funding shortfall, adding it needs $12.5 million to avoid what it calls a critical food gap. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And in western Bahar el-Ghazal, trucks carrying some 300 metric tons of food commodities arrived today to address that state's growing food crisis. The new batch of food, which arrived in Wau town, was delivered by a local trading company called Just In Time Trading that received a letter of credit from the state government. Authorities say this time around, the food will be distributed to state government cooperatives as well as privately run cooperatives, so that ordinary citizens can also buy the much-needed food at significantly reduced prices. Demo Silva Oriello has the story for VOA News from Wau.
The Western Bahar el-Ghazal State Cabinet gathered at Peace Square in Wau town today to witness the arrival of the food transported by the Juba-based Just In Time Trading Company, which is run by a Wau businessman. James Ernest Makwe, Western Bahar el-Ghazal's Minister of Trade and Cooperatives, says officials were afraid the food would be looted during transport along on the main road connecting Western Baal Ghazal to the neighboring states of Western, Central, and Eastern Equatoria.
We were so worried, since you know our state has witnessed insecurity. But thank God the food has arrived safely.
Like previous installments of food that have arrived in the state, these new commodities will be purchased by state employees at reduced prices to help offset general food scarcity. But Makwe also urged citizens to form private cooperatives in order to get some of the food distributed and sold at local WOW markets, also at reduced prices.
We call on all traders in Western Baal Ghazal to sell these goods at reduced prices, beginning with the ministries. We shall also take to the markets and private cooperatives to sell the food at reduced prices. The suffering of our people in Western Baal Ghazal state is why we are asking those who are able to form cooperatives to come and register in order to get their share.
Without discounted prices, a regular sack of maize flour in the market can cost as much as 450 South Sudanese pounds. Western Baal Ghazal Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan says the state is working with the just-in-time company because it has enough capital to match the letters of credit for buying the large installments of food.
When the LC came, I called the state trade chamber and told them, we have got the LC in Western Baal Ghazal, and I asked them, what do you have in your accounts? We found that most of our traders have 80, 60 or 40,000 South Sudanese pounds. The most rich one has 200,000 pounds.
The five trucks which arrived today were carrying maize, flour and sugar purchased in Uganda. Each truck contains at least 50 tons of food, part of an overall 500 metric tons, Western Baal Ghazal officials secured to help feed its citizens. 35 metric tons of food stuffs arrived last month, but ended up in cooperatives run exclusively for state employees who have relatively low salaries. Authorities say this time the food must reach people in villages across the state. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting from WOW.
A group of residents from Western Equatoria State's Maridi County is condemning violence in their home area. Pastoralists originally from Lakes and Warup states are accused of attacking and killing people and burning homes in Maridi in numerous attacks this week. Members of the Maridi community condemned the attacks at a news conference held in the capital today. As Charlton Doki reports for VOA from Juba, they are calling for government action and justice.
Western Equatoria Governor Bangasi Joseph Bakasoro was quoted in media reports as saying 9 people have been killed and several others injured in the recent outbreak of violence. Residents in Maridi say many houses were torched and several people are still unaccounted for, and residents fear they may have died in the fires. Abbas Bulen Ajala is an elder with the Maridi Community Association in Juba. He read a statement to reporters this morning.
The members of Maridi community in Juba and around the world would like to condemn the barbaric act committed by cattle keepers in Maridi from 7 to 9 June 2015, where innocent people were killed, houses burned, and property of unknown value were destroyed.
Governor Bakasoro told Radio Miraya yesterday that the attack was in retaliation for an earlier attack in which unknown people hurled a grenade into a cattle camp, killing and wounding several cattle.
We condemn the action of the cattle keepers who took the law into their hands and indiscriminately attacked innocent members of Maridi who have been too kind to allow the same cattle keepers from Lakes and Warab states to resettle in Maridi County and graze their animals on farmlands.
Ajala says the people of Maridi want to live alongside other people, regardless of their origin and ethnicity. But he says in order to restore peace, harmony and respect for human life, the Maridi community in Juba wants the government to fully implement an order issued in April by President Salva Kiir, ordering pastoralist communities from other states to evacuate their cattle from the three states of Equatoria.
There should be no incursion of civilian with gun to Western Equatorial State in general, but Meridi County in particular. The National Army in Meridi should respect the constitution and provide protection to all citizens of South Sudan without bias towards ethnicity.
Radio Tamazuj quotes the chair of Parliament's Western Equatoria Caucus, Pascal Clement Batali, as appealing to the people of Meridi to exercise restraint and not to treat the violence as an ethnic issue, saying the government is working to address the matter. Yesterday, the National Legislative Assembly formed a delegation to visit Western Equatoria to investigate. Ajala urged all levels of government to carry out what he called a fair investigation into the violence in order to bring justice to the people of Meridi.
You can imagine if somebody has lost his house, more than 20 houses were burned with all what they have inside. Do you think how can those people start their life? They need some humanitarian, and that we are urging those humanitarian organizations to go and make assessment so that they know they need.
Abbas Bulen Ajala is an elder with the Meridi community in Juba. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
That's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Kapio by musician Emmy Yore.
Amboroni kali chipale komika kini mbori najika ko ongarongole yo komika pini mbori najika ko omerongole yo adeni kali akumani wochiriyo kirikiri adeni kali minanja jako abakule mini kali minanja bajanga ko miadunga yote Minungu pachipa ate Nyadunga yote Jimi manyasa Nyadunga yote Jimi manyasa kwa Naduru kifuarabia chipa ichinji mbya nani Mbiko barakati kifu miteni ginia Kash. Aguyo kifuawande, aguyo kiena aragi Aguyo kingebia, aguyo kiena ameme Miadunga yoto, jimi manya sako Mieina ngoto, goni mbanya nami Miadunga yoto, jimi manya sako. Miadunga yoto, jimi manya sako.
We've been listening to South Sudanese musician Emmy Yore singing Zande in the song Kapio. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here tomorrow evening and hope you will be too for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.